Coming up on TMSPM, you gots to shout it out, son.
Marriage ruined your Xbox gamer score.
United did it again.
Utah takes down the curtain.
You naughty penguin.
Dan, the tabletop man.
The Twitter top. Shit. Your Twitter questions and more on this episode of The Morning Stream PM.
This is The Morning Stream, but it's not in the morning, it's at night.
TMS PM.
Good morning, evening, everyone. Good morning, evening.
Good morning, evening.
Oh, what a day. I'm a little scattered.
Morning. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, morning, good morning.
I'm totally scattered today, but it's okay because here we are doing TMS PM. I just found out about a half an hour ago that Wendy and her family are going to go to the Beatles cover concert we're going to on Friday.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a cover
band.
So
is it like the 1964 group, the one that travels around and they do like a spot-on impersonation of...
I don't actually know if it's them. Yeah. I hope it is now that you say that. I don't know how...
Do you want to borrow? You can borrow this t-shirt if you like.
Let's see. Oh, yeah, look at that. Paul has no shoes on, therefore he's dead.
He's dead. Paul is dead.
Yeah, Paul is dead. He must be dead because his feet are bare. That was such a dumb thing. Oh,
Paul's going to freaking outlive all of them.
Of course he is. He totally is. He already is. He's going to be the oldest man on the block.
He's outlasted half of them.
He was a young buck then, and now he's the old buck, and it's fine.
That's right.
Anyway, so that's happening Friday, and I'm all excited. But in the meantime, things have been crazy today. And there's like three kids I don't know in the living room playing video games because somebody's mom's upstairs. So that's fun.
Mom, can we go with you over to Scott Johnson's house?
He has a PlayStation that we can just leave discs all over the floor at. Meh.
Actually, I don't know who it is, but I see some nephews as well. I trust them. So
oh, there
should
you
be
go.
Fine.
Okay.
Should be fine.
Hey, a couple hours. T-minus 4 hours, and I'm seeing Queen. So we're gonna get our classic rock fix this weekend, Scott.
I'd say. Jeez, how late does that one go? What time to get home from that there, Dale?
I don't know. It starts at 8.
Oh, so you'll be
it starts at 8, man. Oh my God.
Yeah, maybe home at midnight. Maybe.
Maybe home at midnight, and then we're gonna go see Spider-Man: Homecoming tomorrow noon.
I don't know when I'm seeing that yet.
In the recliner theater. So somebody please take notes on Spider-Man so you can let me know.
Yeah, just if you see Brian in there, just wiggle him. Wake him up. He'll be fine. Just let him know everything's good. Yeah, I don't know when we're seeing it. Probably Saturday. I don't know. Something. So it's Spider-Man. Right. I got to go, you know.
You got to go. My favorite Marvel character.
Yeah, you love the Spider-Man.
I love the Spider-Man. Yeah. What's your favorite Marvel character?
Boy, he's right up there, but if I had to pick... Yeah. Probably, depending on when you ask me and what era we're talking about, but probably the Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
Probably. I think he's pretty great. I mean, obviously, we're not talking about teams here. So if we're talking about specific character, probably Wolverine. Maybe. I liked Iron Man before he was cool, and I'm kind of off him now.
Sure.
I think
a little
he was
Iron Man overload.
A little bit. Like he's like this mascot of the whole MCU thing, and it's
kind of
fine. It's fine, but I don't know. I just kind of wish he was a little bit more obscure like he used to be. I mean, you know what?
I liked it before he got popular.
I mean, but it's probably got to be Spider-Man. I mean, my favorite hero character, cape and cowl kind of character of all time ever is Batman.
Yeah, right.
I think he's just straight up the greatest, you know, version of a comic book hero there is. However, if you're saying just Marvel... Yeah, probably Spider-Man. And if you ask me in a couple of years, maybe I'm back to Wolverine. I kind of go back and forth on those two guys. Like, who else is Moon Knight, I'll say. Moon Knight. There you go.
Moon Knight's great. The Impossible Man. I keep waiting. I don't know if he's a Fantastic Four character, if that's why they can't put him in anything, but feels like Impossible Man, who's basically the Mr. Mixoplistic or whatever, however you say that.
Mixoplix?
Mixoplix, is that it?
Yeah, what's his deal? Why is he, is he a bad guy? Or a good guy?
No. The Impossible Man is a character that Reed Richards discovered from a universe full of Impossible Men, or a planet full of Impossible Men, and they can basically boink themselves into any shape or appearance.
Wow! So they're not. So they're like shapeshifters, kind of.
Yes.
When you say
yes.
Boink, you mean they have to smack themselves? Or?
I mean boning, you know, boning actually have, every day and night.
I see. Sexual activity themselves into a shape. I got it.
Yeah, I know. Boink, I guess, is the you can't use the word boink anymore.
I don't
boink
know.
Boink is no longer an innocent word.
Has he ever teamed up with anybody, or would I know him from anything else, this impossible man?
There was some impossible man and thing team-ups, I think. Hmm. If you saw him, you'd recognize him. Basically, he's like green, pointy-headed.
Oh, now that's ringing a bell. Weird. Yep, that's ringing a bell. Hold on. Impossible man.
Yeah.
Yeah, there he is. I totally know that guy. Sometimes he's a little skinny dude. Sometimes he's a big buff dude.
Usually a little skinny dude. I see that art right there for big buff dude. Mm-hmm. I think that's just, you know, one of the ways he's boinked himself into a different shape.
Now, sometimes it shows him with two of him in some shot. Is that a thing where he can dupe himself, or he's got a brother or something weird?
There was an impossible woman for a while because Marvel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, look at that. There's actually a panel showing Impossible Man and Mr. Mixelplick.
Oh, hanging out?
Hanging out together.
All right. So once again, there's an equivalent DC to Marvel character in almost every case.
Oh, we'll have to ask Steven Schleicher about this on Monday, yeah. About Impossible Man.
Yeah, he probably hates him, my guess is.
You think so?
He hates those, like, weird... I think it's Steven who hates him, but pretty sure he's the one that hates, like, the weird little... creepy little brainiac looking little dudes that are always causing trouble.
They should have like a three, so they've got him with Mr. Mixelplick. They should also probably throw in the Great Gazoo in there as well. For some reason, I feel like the three of them belong in the same universe.
Who is the Great okay, now I gotta look the Great Gazoo up.
Come on,
that little dude,
Great Gazoo?
Yeah, no, now I see him. He hung out on the Flintstones a lot.
That's right. He was the guy who called Fred Flintstone a dum-dum.
Yeah.
Hello, dum-dum.
Yep, you're totally right. And didn't he do something with... he appeared on The Simpsons once or something as a joke.
Probably an equivalent, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure. And they did a little live-action one for the Flintstones movies that was...
Oh, yeah, look at that. Was he primarily a Flintstones guy, though? That was his
main...
He was
primary Flintstones.
All right, so he wasn't a carryover from... Do you ever show up in the Jetsons, since that was actually from space?
Somebody said that he showed up on the Jetsons, but I don't remember seeing him there. He just looks like he'd be on the Jetsons.
Yeah.
Like he's like Spacely Spur or Cogswell Cogs got sucked into a vortex and sent into the past.
He just looks like a cereal box mascot to me, doesn't he?
He totally does. You know, totally like created to just so they could have a green vitamin.
Yeah.
Right. In the Flintstones chewable vitamins.
A green chewable. We've learned something now. Hey, I want to give a shout out to Megan. Megan, I know you're listening. I'm not going to get specific about why, because I don't want to, you know, I don't know that I want to drag their personal lives through anything, but she facing a tough thing here in the last couple of days, and I heard about it through her very thoughtful husband, and says that she is a constant listener of the show. So Megan, if you're listening to this, it's all good. You totally got this. That thing you got is not the end of anything. And I'm being real vague on purpose.
Wow.
But
like, it's like you're playing a pipe organ of Johnson's and you're pulling each one.
Did you hear that? That was my code for Megan. You're going to be great. Don't worry. Stress none.
I don't even know what it's about, Megan, but I know you're going to be fine.
Yes. See, even Brian knows, and he doesn't even know.
Even I know.
Yeah.
Even I know, and I don't know.
Exactly right. All right. Here's your news.
Radio today is different. Powerful networks span the nation from coast to coast. Shortwave radio girdles the globe.
Just a little evening news brought to you by...
Hey, do you have a podcast? Does your podcast need a theme? But you don't want to go online and pick something royalty-free only to hear it get used on another podcast a week later. You want something original, made just for you, to your specifications. That's where Andrew Allen comes in. You've heard his music on this very podcast, as well as his fantastic set of albums of geeky music covers. I wrote this, and I'm stumbling all over the hell of it. Now you can have him write an original theme for your podcast. Just visit andrewallenmusic.com and click the commissions button. You'll be amazed at how inexpensive it can be to have your very own theme. That's andrewallenmusic.com. Use coupon code TMSPM for 10% off.
Wow, that's pretty good. You guys hear this? Whoops, not that. Sorry, here it is. You guys hear this? That's his rendition of the TMS theme. He also did
Current Geek. Yeah, right?
I have
Current Geek.
Not this part, but then this part coming up. Oh yeah, baby! Drums, bringing the drums, and bringing the strings and the horns, and oh yeah, see?
Xylophone.
Yeah, he's great. He does good work.
Super talented. Yeah. And you won't hear that. Like, you know, you'll have that, and it won't be on any other show but yours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's totally worth tapping that dude and getting what you got to get. Oh, that's he did right. The AIE theme as well, did he? No, that's different guy, Mewcow, I think.
That's what Mewcow says.
I think it's a different one, unless they're using a new one. No.
Maybe they're using a new one. But AndrewAllenMusic.com.
Yeah, check it out. Okay, let's dive in here. Okay. A dude had an 11-year streak as Xbox Gamer Score record holder. His name was...
Wow.
It's a hell of a thing. Stallion83 was his name. Oh, that name.
Right.
Stallion.
I can't wait till we start using numbers in our regular names. Like, oh, what's your it is kind of Logan's Run. What's your daughter's name? She's adorable. Oh, her name is Jessica Six.
Jessica Six. Oh, that's lovely. It is good to run.
Jessica was taken. So Jessica Six.
I don't know if we'd ever get to that. Hopefully not. We get too overpopulated and everyone's gotta have a different number for their names.
Right. There's 11 Jessicas already in her school, so we call her Jessica 12.
We had two Pauls in my school, Big Paul and Little Paul.
Oh, really?
That. Yeah, that's how we determine the two Pauls. All the Brians here, we just say Dunaway or Ibbot.
Right.
Just to keep it clean. Well, Ray Stallion 83 Cox is an Xbox achievement hunter, playing hundreds of games to earn as many achievements as possible to rack up his gamer score. His drive has kept him in first place for Xbox gamer score for over 11 years. That is, until Tuesday. Cox decided to get married, go on a honeymoon, instead of playing games to keep his gamer score rising. He's apparently too busy enjoying his new marriage, giving runner-up Steven Smirnoff Rowe enough time to dethrone the gamer score king and take the record out from under Cox's nose.
Oh, no!
True Achievement reported. At the time of reporting, Rowe sits at the gamer score of 1,592,530. Cox has returned to gaming, and it looks like he's at a gamer score of 1,587,249. So he
the
is.
Irony. The irony of this is that she only married him for his gamer score.
Oh, that's good. Who would do that? Oh, it's bad, though. Wouldn't that be bad if that was your.
It'd be bad. Oh. Like, oh, well, I guess I better look for this Smirnoff guy. Do you know his number?
seems like a bad move. Cox didn't seem angry about this 11-year streak when it was broken. His response to the news, he was cool with it.
Oh, that's good.
Here's the problem, though. That's too many. I mean, to get that score, he had to play everything ever released for that console.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's the only way you do it, because every single point in that number comes from... You got 100 achievement points here, you got 1,000 achievement points for this game, you got 200 for this game. And you got to play everything. That's downloadables. That's disc games. That's everything from the 360 forward.
That seems miserable. It seems like all of a sudden it's a job,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. That you pay. You're not getting paid to do. You're paying to do it.
Right. Exactly. Excuse me. It's like, all right. I'm giving my $16 a month to Xbox so that I can work and play every single game. Oh, which I also have to buy.
Yeah, you gotta buy the Xbox. You gotta buy the games. You have to play the games. You have to pay your monthly fee to be online for the achievements that are online only.
That's right. Like, but you know, there's so many things that gamer score will get you.
Yeah, nothing.
Nothing.
Zip. An article on Mashable.com is what it'll get you.
Right. Exactly.
So I don't know.
Oh,
maybe it's time. Maybe it's time. It's fine.
Poor bastard.
You'd be okay, buddy. United gave a toddler seat away and made his mom hold the baby for 3 hours. That doesn't sound that bad, but I don't know. Maybe it's because we would often carry our kids when we go on long flights. I don't know. I don't know why. I don't know why that doesn't
sound
good.
But it would be you and Kim, right? So you could hand the kids back and forth.
That's true. If it's just the mom. I mean, kids don't sit tight, especially for this flight to... Let's see. I'm trying to find... She went, the first leg of the trip, Hawaii to Houston, went fine. So did the layover. Then they went to, okay, so this isn't so bad. I thought it was from Hawaii all the way to, like, the States where they made her do it.
Oh, yeah, no.
It was like a 3-4 hour flight
to Boston.
It is
Houston to Boston, which is, you know, that's not a short flight.
No, that's like 4 hours, 4.5 hours or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's see. She was bound for a teacher's conference in Boston, and she was traveling. Her traveling companion was a 20-month-old Tazo. Tazo?
Tazo. Tazo 43.
There you go. she says that kid's ticket cost as much as hers, nearly $1,000. So
jeez.
It's, you know, they gave away a human being seat that costs as much as hers does. It's not like, all I'm saying is, hey, United, freaking get your poo together.
Right. And it was a standby passenger. So they basically said, no, the child's going to have to be, you're going to have to hold your child for the rest of this flight because we've overbooked and we need to give this standby passenger your seat.
Lame.
Which she paid for.
Yeah, lame. This is like, what, the third of these in a couple of months for United?
United is really pooping the bed is what they're doing lately.
You guys got to knock it off. In fact, these are big, obvious infractions. You guys have to be extra careful because the spotlight is on you. Everybody's watching your BS. You're going to get yourselves in more trouble, so knock it off. I really don't like United. I didn't like them before now. No. Now I really don't like them.
No, I stopped doing United when they started nickeling and diming for every little thing. I'm Southwest, man. Yeah. Sure, I have to go on and pick out my own seat. Yeah. Whatever. I'm fine with picking my own seat.
Yeah, they do a good job over there.
Exactly.
I like Delta a lot. I just don't like United. They made me run across your whole big penis-shaped airport that one time.
It's a swastika, Scott.
Oh, that sucked so bad. I hate it.
End times.
here's another one here. Utah. Oh, look, a Utah story, everyone.
Utah connection.
Utah just did away with liquor hiding curtains. You heard of this?
No.
Ordering a drink in Utah bar has long been a surreal experience. For years, bars and some restaurants have been hidden behind partitions designed to keep bartenders from view of underage drinkers. So if an 18-year-old kid's in the thing, you're supposed to be a bartender who cannot be seen by that kid.
So bartenders have to disappear behind this curtain, make your drink, and then come back out. Voila!
Yeah,
here's a beverage.
Yeah, kind of like you would a restaurant or something. It's dumb. It's always been dumb. Like, why they ever do... And other states still do this. There's some, I think parts of Pennsylvania still do this. It's stupid. But anyway, even for drinkers at the bar itself. But now, that's a thing of the past. NPR's Amy Head reports, those days have finally ended for some restaurants as a new liquor law goes into effect in the state. The law will allow the so-called Zion Curtain, as the partitions are called, to be torn down for restaurants that are able to keep diners at least 10 feet away from their bar or 5 feet away from the bars with half partitions. Huh. So it's kind of a half step. As The Economist reports, the 2010 law, which had been implemented these controversial curtain requirements, was even in effect for restaurants that serve nothing stronger than beer. As a result, some chain restaurants slowed their Utah expansions. Zion curtains existed before 2010, but they were briefly taken down in 2009 following complaints that they were too difficult to enforce. The 2010 law clarified the requirements, but sparked another round of complaints from restaurateurs who claimed that it gave other restaurants who were grandfathered in an unfair advantage. I agree. It totally does. Anyway, it's gone now. So,
meanwhile, Las Vegas is looking at ways to put bottles directly into patrons' mouths.
I know you couldn't. 6 hours away, their law couldn't be more opposite.
Just tip back in your seat, and we're just going to plop that bottle right there, that rum bottle right in your mouth. By the way, I think today was opening day for this new thing in Vegas that I can't wait to see while I'm out there called Tipsy Robot.
Uh-oh. Tell me more.
Sounds like J.J. Abrams' original name for his production company.
Totally. What is it? What is it now?
Bad Robot.
Bad Robot. Yeah. Tipsy Robot sounds even better. So wait a minute. Can I guess and then you tell me if I'm wrong?
Please do. Please guess.
Tipsy Robot. Okay, I'm going to narrow it down. Is it an actual robot?
It is an actual robot.
Okay. Is it the size of a human being or somewhere in that range? I mean, it's not like a giant room, like a giant room-sized robot or something dumb like that, right? It's like
not a full-size giant robot. I'll say that, yes.
Okay. Is it something I blow into?
No, it is not.
Okay, then I have no idea. What is the Tipsy Robot?
Oh, let me give you a video, Scott.
Okay. I'll be happy to look at your video.
I'll explain why. Let's see. I'll put it in our Skype combo here.
Skype combo is a fine place for it.
Okay. Tipsy Robot, and while you're watching that video, Oh, why on earth did I do that? I just made your face massive on my screen here.
Oh, look at this.
So it is a robot bartender at Planet Hollywood now that makes and mixes drinks. And so it's like so GLaDOS looking, really, when you look at this thing.
All right. Let's take a look. It's like a big, it's almost like a car manufacturing arm.
Yes. Yeah, it totally is. But then up there hanging from the ceiling are bottles like stalactites all hanging down. And it goes to exactly the alcohol that you need. You order from an iPad.
Yeah.
And then it makes and mixes the drink. And I don't know why it keeps going back to that. I guess that must be water. It's just, it's been trained to water down the drinks.
So, oh, look at that. Okay, that thing, it's, oh, these are actual bottles hanging from the ceiling.
Those are actual bottles. Yeah.
And so somebody's job is to go make sure those bottles are always full or full
yeah,
enough.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Oh, look at that.
Look at that. It's getting ice. And then it's going to shake it.
Okay, I kind of love this.
Yep, it's totally going to shake it.
Wait, I got to skip ahead here. Okay, here we go. It's taking it out.
About a minute and 2 seconds.
All right, we're in about a minute. Okay, he's going to... Oh, look at that. He's stirring it, basically. It's called the Kuka? Or Kuka's the brand?
I guess that's the manufacturer, yeah.
Okay, so they pour it into the... Oh, wow.
That's kind of a low pour, actually. Like, yeah.
It's... Oh, look how quick it goes.
I know. And I like... And the lemon wedge is already in there.
Yeah.
Oh, this is great.
Yeah. Do you think... I mean, is there's probably something to be... Oh, look at that. How it slides forward.
Yeah.
There is something to be said, though, right, for a custom mixed drink being a preferable yes. thing, right? Like
actually being presented and done for you by a living human being that you can chat with while it's being done. I mean...
Yeah.
How we're not far from, oh, okay, you'd like a gin and tonic? Great. Here's some gin and tonic powder mix. And just hold it under that water fountain over there. Shake it. And there you go. There's your drink.
Because at some point, this is kind of a step closer to like, you know, robots making all our food, making all our drinks, making all our everything. And it makes me wonder, you know, what is the threshold for quality? I don't know. Because I don't drink. So this is going to be great because you'll sit down, you'll use it.
Yes.
And you'll know what a duper derp supposed to taste like, and then you'll get one, and you'll go, "Oh no, that's like flat, or that's whatever."
Right, exactly. I don't, you know, the lemon, has the lemon wedge been washed before you put it in there and shook it in with the ingredients?
Yeah, it's very odd, very odd. So I like watching those kind of robots move, though. There's something about them; they're hypnotic.
Very fluid, mm-hmm. like a lot more fluid than you think a robot should be, because it's like,
something about that I'm into. I can't.
Yeah.
Quite explain it. It's like,
but it is total GLaDOS. Like it's total.
It's like when you hear somebody eat, or what was your deal? You could you like to listen to some sound. What was it we talked about on the show? Not eat. It was something else. It was like
definitely isn't hearing somebody eat.
What was it? There was some sound I can't stand, and you like it. It was like a YouTube video. Oh, you know, like
wow,
like,
I don't know what it is.
It's like the people who are driven nuts by fingernails on a chalkboard, and then some people are just fine with it. It's like
yeah,
that kind of thing.
Yeah, cilantro or something.
Yeah.
Man, if somebody in the chat room remembers, I don't know. Whispering? Oh, right.
Was it whispering?
Japanese, that Japanese app for the sound soothing deal, the Orbit.
Right.
And one of the things was Japanese women whispering in your ear.
That's what it was. Yep.
Yes.
Can't stand that sound. Oh, so annoying to me.
Right.
I don't know what that has to do with this, but I thought I'd bring it up. By the way, if you ever really wanted to just have the stinkiest possible guts and clear a whole room out, I have a recommendation for you.
Oh, good.
The Twin Pack Alberto All Natural Original Beef Jerky Premium Steak with Natural Smoke Flavor Added. This one right here.
Uh-huh.
This will make enemies out of your friends and family.
Really?
Oh, my gosh, dude. I can't even tell you.
Clear a room.
Yeah, I can't. No one will come in my office today. For obvious reasons.
Right.
I've been in here creating a Dutch oven of sorts, if you know what I'm saying. We're going to take a break when we come back. Dan, the tabletop man, will be here. I have some questions for him. We also want to talk a little bit about that weird thing we played at Nerdtacular, and he'll have recommendations of his own. So that's all coming right up. But before that, musical treat from Brian.
That's right. And this one actually comes to us from a listener who emailed me and said... No, this one actually didn't come as a request from a listener. No, never mind. Forget everything I just said. This is a married couple from Minneapolis, Minnesota, who have been creating this kind of euphoric dream pop for a while.
All right.
Seven original tracks on their brand new album, which is called Jupiter Beach. And I really like this. And it, again, stands up to multiple listens. Influences include The Beatles, John Lennon, Elliot King, Pink Floyd, Radiohead, Joni Mitchell, and The Grateful Dead. I dig this. I dig this a lot. This is a sweet tune. The band is The Peace Life, and it's P-E-A-C-E. The album is Jupiter Beach. Here is the lead single from it, Ethanogen.
Ethanogen. Ask your doctor if Ethanogen is right for you.
Do not take Ethanogen if you are allergic to Ethanogen.
There you go. Here it is. We'll be right back.
Won't you have me be myself again? Dress up, let's transcend. Take you for a spin, end up with a ball of sin. You're not here to only dance. I'm not one to change my stance. Teach me how.
Really good. You say they're listeners?
No, huh? Oh. No, they're
you're saying that before, and then it changed. Okay.
Yes,
because that was awesome. I really like cool? That a lot. Yeah,
really dream poppy kind of stuff.
I'm going to have to listen to them again. Oh, that reminds me, a little piece of business here. If you guys ever are the YouTube watchers, like if you're watching this right now on YouTube and you're thinking, man, what happened to the other day's episode that says it's blocked in my country or whatever? Once in a while, even though Brian has full rights to play the songs that are in the middle of the song or the show, YouTube still thinks that we can't. So they'll do their little takedown thing, and then we'll usually dispute it. And 80% of the time, that works. It just takes a couple of days, and then they'll just let us know, oh, okay, you're clear, whatever. Sometimes they don't at all, and there's just not a ton we can do about it.
Right, exactly.
So I'm just letting you know.
Yeah, I even have like the screenshot of permission from the band, but you know, sometimes it just doesn't work.
Yeah, when you do all that stuff algorithmically, there's just no room for wiggle.
Right. So. It's the, you know, and it's the label having just a thing with YouTube saying, don't let them use our music. Yep. Just kind of this global thing. And I just, you know, be nice if we could override that, being the influential hit makers that we are here on TMS.
Well, is that what we are? All right. Now
we are the influential hit makers.
Got it. Perfect. Let's get Dan in here.
Okay.
See what's up.
By the way, that you can make it Tipsy Robot. $14, and it's like vodka, simple syrup, lime, and ginger beer.
Oh.
It's like, oh, geez, they're expensive.
That sounds...
You're really paying for the watching a robot make your drink is what you're paying for.
None of that sounds cheap.
Nope.
At all. Here's a little thing for Dan. See, it's because I can't find his other music. So that's why I'm using this today. Hey, everyone. Look, it's Dan Patrice. He's the tabletop man. Dan, what's going on there, buddy?
Greetings, programs.
Hey,
how are you?
I haven't seen you since Nerdtacular 2017.
I know. It's been like, 2 days?
Not even that. Well, actually, a little more than that. What's weird is this time a week ago, we were less than 2 hours away from the meet and greet outside. So we were all rushing around getting stuff done. I was upstairs prepping in the big room, and that's weird.
I think this time a week ago, me and John were taking a nap, getting ready for the meet and greet.
There you go. Together spooning, I assume, or how'd that go?
Of course. Okay. I mean, there's no other way to do it. When you get close as team members, you got to really stay close.
Hey, you're a guy who's in the biomedical field in terms of the pharmacy side of things. Can you tell me why beef jerky makes you smell like you're going to die? What's the deal with that?
Well, it's got to be all the... that nice processed and compact beef that's going through your wonderful gut.
Yeah.
Because we know how good your colon is.
Yeah, my colon is pretty sweet. Top of the line, straight off the, fresh out of the factory there. it's just bad. It says here that it's the bold taste of smoked hardwood.
It's probably some of the extra, seasoning and stuff. And sometimes when you smoke it down that confined, you know, compact.
Yeah.
Man, when it goes through and it just... It's not a whole lot left for you to actually absorb. And then, you know, all the bacteria in your GI, man, has a field day with that stuff.
Yeah.
So
my big middle finger to that stuff. It's making my day hard.
Anyway. So you're talking about that awesome robot from Vegas?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So my wife actually, at her store, she works at an independent that does high volume. They actually have a robot that will actually count pills and put them on. Label the bottles and put them into the bottles. We have what's called Parata machines ourselves where it just counts out the meds, but you've got to actually do the bottles and everything else. Her store has a bigger, I think they call it Sparky, and they actually label their, I think they have the top 50, I don't think it's quite the top 100 drugs, but about top 50 drugs will get into the Sparky.
And it's like a big robot arm that picks a cup up, puts it down, sorts the pills, puts the caps on, all that stuff.
Do you worry that you're going to be replaced one day by a robot?
Yeah.
Well, you always have to have the verification. Even in some of the bigger places like hospitals and stuff, you still got to have that verification that nothing screws up, because invariably there's still screw ups where it breaks tablets or capsules or count, you know, puts the wrong things there. And somebody's got to be there. Some idiot's got to be there to replace, you know, to refill it all.
Mm-hmm.
And we're always got to be there to double check everything. So that's what the big thing is about.
Well, that's the impression I got from watching that bar robot is it is precision minded as it is. That's also kind of a problem, because if something's not exactly to the measurements it needs to be in terms of this bottle is always exactly in this one place, and when the arm swings around and puts something down, it needs to always be the exact place, or else now you got water pouring out for no reason, or you got the wrong bottle underneath, or a million of those little things go wrong. So it's so dependent on like this exact pinpoint registration of everything that That's not necessary. I don't think that's the future. The future is going to be machine learning that's smart enough to know if the cup is off a little bit, or if something has moved, or if it itself is not exactly calibrated the way it's supposed to be.
Well, the biggest thing when you see like restaurant owners, like you ever watch, you know, this guilty pleasure watching like Bar Rescue, what's the biggest thing that they complain about is that the pours are off or that they're giving away too much alcohol.
Yeah.
A robot will never give away alcohol unless it's programmed in that you get some sort of reward system, which is probably illegal in Vegas or something. But, you know, if the pours are always perfect, the amount of money they save on these robots is going to far outweigh anything that they may lose if they lose a bottle here or there. Or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
And as a customer, I can't get behind that. I want the accidental lung pours, or I want to be able to, you know, be chatting with the bartender and, you know, oh yeah, I like Star Wars too. Very cool. And maybe he'll throw a little extra into the gin pour.
Has that worked for you before? Like a little Star Wars conversation got you a little extra?
Maybe not Star Wars, but, you know, a little flirting or, you know, whatever. Doesn't hurt ever.
I love
this. When I used to bartend in New York, like they would give you a certain amount. They're like, you know what? After, you know, if a person buys, you know, this many, and this is all off the record because, you know, again, legality, I'm sure I'm past the statute of limitations. But, you know, the boss would be like, you know, after about five or six, you know, if somebody's buying a lot of drinks for his friends or something, you know, throw him a beer or don't charge him for one because it's just going to end up in your pocket anyway as a tip. And it's just going to keep the bartenders happy. And a happy bartender is not a stealing bartender, you know, so that's it. They kind of want some of that in there, but I'm with Brian, man. I want to be able to give a couple of winks, you know, or come back to the same person there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Got to give Francine a nice look down the bar. My dad was my dad didn't drink at all, and he was a bartender, and his boss when at the bar he worked at, said that he loved hiring non-drinking bartenders because they never, they never dipped into the store stash, right? And B, they were always like top of their game, not drunk, not kind of half off their butt. They just were really efficient bartenders, and they'd get the best tips. They'd have the best customer reactions and all that stuff. So this guy that my dad worked for way back in the day used to try to only hire non-drinker bartenders. And it turns out that's harder than you think, though, because most of them, you know, if you're a good bartender, chances are you're a good drinker, you know?
Yeah.
Because you know your stuff or whatever. He was like this rare thing. And I've met another guy, my friend Darren, I keep bringing up on the show. He was a bartender for years, never touched the stuff, never drank in his life.
But and I'm sure your dad was probably good with, you know, a sober bartender. I'm sure your dad was probably a pretty big dude.
Oh, yeah.
His family's all pretty tall. Yeah. So he probably works as a, you know, could be another bouncer too, or help break up scuffles if you're sober.
If something got weird, he could kind of go, okay, that's enough, you know, and get people out of there or whatever. But also he'd be really good conversationalist because, I mean, I personally love talking to drunk people. I think it's a freaking hoot. And when you know they're drunk and you're not, there's just something, you feel like you got a little extra power. Unless they're podcasting with you, and then you don't have a lot of control over what they say. Anyway, so Dan, we came off a real fun Nerdtacular. Part of it that I really enjoyed was the last day was all board games on that night. And of course, they were there all weekend and people played a ton. And it was all great. And Matt, who brings so many games every year, brought, what's it called now? It's this
Captain Sonar.
Captain Sonar, which I thought was a space game. Like three or four times I thought it was a space game. Probably because people said, oh, it's like Space Team meets blah, blah, blah. And I kept...
What's the name? I mean, yeah, Sonar is a thing you use in subs, but Captain Sonar does sound like, you know, some guy who flies through space.
Yeah,
but you could pretend it's in space too, because I mean, even just changing that map. So instead of, you know, maybe you're navigating a minefield a meteor field in space, rather than going around, you know, islands.
Yeah,
so, I mean, you could just pretend it's
instead space. Of surfacing, you go stealth or, you know, whatever the thing is. Yeah. So that actually would be a pretty fun variant on that thing. But that was a riot. Like, it took me, you know, a bit to get used to what we were trying to do. But we were, what, 4-on-4?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yes. 4-on-4.
And so Brian sits across from me. You got this, like, divider thing between us with all this cool art on it. And on each side, we've got erase markers and plastic sheets of various things. Dan was the engineer. Eric next to me was the... What did Eric do?
He was the first mate, I think. He decided which systems he wanted to power up at the time, and I had to provide him with the power.
Yeah, and my the way he would power those up, imagine them in like cooldowns if you play games like World of Warcraft, where if I moved, those movements would translate to being able to power up a cooldown slot on a system. So if it was missiles or if it was sonar or if it was something else, he could add those to it as I moved, and he could only do it when I moved. I was the navigator or the captain, basically, so was Brian. Mm-hmm. And so we'd say to our teams, all right, we're going north 1 or north 2 or west 1 or whatever.
Right. And they'd say, oh, no, you can't go north anymore without frying your engine, man.
Yeah.
Something else. Go another direction.
Exactly. And then so Dan would go, oh, dude, I need you to go down and up or down and left at least once so I can get this other system back online, because things would break depending on your movements.
Clear
depending on your movements.
I need you to go west, Captain.
Yeah. And sometimes you can't because there's an island in your way.
Give her all she's got.
Yeah. And it'd be like an island. You'd be like, I can't go west. We're screwed. We got to go down, up, down, whatever. Or we'd surface because it made sense or whatever. So you had to communicate constantly with these different teams. And then you had Mark on my other side, who was communications officer, and his job was to try to figure out where you guys were. Mm-hmm. And he had John Funk across from him doing the same thing for your team. The thing about those two guys is they have radio access to what the other team's movements are, like you might in a real scenario. I mean, they're trying to recreate that a little bit. It's a little weird how, you know, John's like, I didn't hear what you did. You say left two, right? Yeah, he keeps checking.
What was your last four movements,
yeah,
Scott?
Yeah.
Was that north, northwest? What?
Yeah. I mean, it fits the game, but it's a little janky, that part. But anyway, and then the game boils down to what is basically a very complicated version of Battleship. And that got me to thinking, and this is the question I had for Dan. I'm not saying they did this, but I got the feeling that this team took something as basic as Battleship, where all it is just place your ships and then guess where to bomb, right?
Right.
The variation comes in with like, I missed, but I kind of think he made a poker face, so I think it maybe is one up. Oh, it is one up. Now I need to decide if I go left, am I going to get one, or if I go right, am I going to miss? Like, you know, there's some there's a little complexity to Battleship, but it's kind of a guessing game. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how often game designers who are making tabletop experiences approach something as old and venerable, say, as Battleship, and go, let's start with that as a core thing, and then let's just build on top of that until we can build all these other mechanics and these sort of interactions and things on top of it. Do you think that's a way that some of these games get made? It's not always just from scratch. They take an existing context and sort of iterate on top of that and build something bigger?
Well, I mean, game design is so complex. See, there are actually companies that will go, like, there's a game, Restoration Games is a company that's gotten licensed from games from the 80s and has updated them. So there are definitely designers that look into older mechanisms and stuff like that, because there's no, you can't really copyright a game. You can copyright the art that goes with it. You can't really copyright the mechanisms, because analog, like tabletop games, are completely different than like computer games, because there's code and stuff like that that goes in computer games. So this guy, one of the main designers, his name is Roberto Fraga. Mm-hmm. He's actually a Frenchie. He is more well known for doing a lot of hobby games and a lot of kids games.
Yeah.
So there's and actually in Europe is, you know, the hotbed of all sorts of designers. I mean, we've got a lot of good designers over here, but European, between France, because another game that I'll mention in a minute is actually Bruno Cathala. I believe he's also he's also from France. I mean, he's another great designer. Anyway, so Roberto Fraga, he actually might have, since he does so many kids games for HABA, he might have been looking at some of the older games and kind of came up with this, because he did it with another gentleman, Johan Lemonnier. I don't think he's done a whole lot of things. So it's kind of such a departure from what this guy's done that I don't know how in the heck he came up with it. Unless maybe he saw Space Cadets and be like, well, we can refine this a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I wonder about that. And I'm not even saying it's a bad, in fact, I think it's probably a good thing. Like, video game designers do this, they take an existing thing and make it better. You could argue all of Blizzard's best hits are games that were refined elsewhere, and then they just added their own refinement on top of it, and in some cases totally perfected it. So it's just interesting.
Well, it's not foreign in board games at all, because, I mean, there are, you get one mechanism that people love. I mean, when Dominion came out and deck building came out, there was a billion and one deck building clones.
Sure.
You know, you've got games that have come out that are called Roll and Write, That's the biggest craze right now, is the what's quote unquote roll and write is the biggest craze, because you've got games like Quicks. You're rolling dice, everybody's writing stuff on, you know, kind of like the old Yahtzee days. Like, all of a sudden, that's the biggest thing in board games, is people are just coming up with these things like crazy, and then it's just a matter of finding out which ones are the good ones.
All right, so the final, this all makes sense to me. Here's my only other question. I went ahead and impulse bought One Deck Dungeon.
Yep.
Because all I hear is everyone rave at the event. I saw people playing it and going crazy over it. What, did I make a good choice? Did
One Deck Dungeon, or is it 5-minute Dungeon, or are those two different things?
Those are two different things, actually.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
So One Deck Dungeon I got on, Amazon for like $19. And it's a two-player thing, although I guess if you buy an extra set, you can basically create a four-player game out of the two sets. That's a full game. All four of you are playing at the same time, not two sets.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
Yeah, I've heard that, but some have recommended to do that. Some have said no.
One set is excellent because you can play one to two players, and it's by Chris Cieslik, and it's Asmodee Games. One Deck Dungeon is an excellent solo game to play as well, and I highly recommend it as well. And what's cool about the art in it, and I think an expansion is changing it a little bit, but all the characters in One Deck Dungeon are all female.
Mm. Oh, interesting.
And I don't mean like nipple crazed females. These are actually normal, good art renditions of females.
I'm looking at them now. None of them have like big exposed midriffs or boobs hanging out or any of the stuff that your stereotype dude bro games make.
I mean, they're cute pictures, but they're not dude bro female pictures.
No, not at all.
Which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
Sure.
But I know that. But they went through great lengths to make sure that that they did that very tastefully. And it's a fun game. It won't take you more than like 20, 30 minutes to play in one sitting. Got some dice rolling, some card play. It's fun. I like it.
What I've heard about it that people like about it is what you love about a big D&D game, the dungeon crawl part of a D&D game, without the 6 hours and the setup and the, you know, multiple weekend campaigns, which is a great thing and should exist. But for when you just want to sit down and get 25-minute pound out an experience that sends you on a dungeon crawling adventure, it's like the Diablo to D&D kind of.
It's the fast food to the full dining experience.
Right.
It's kind of like that when you go to not necessarily going fast food, because fast food is kind of a little better. This is almost like going to that gas station that has hot dogs that you really like. Like, you're not going to do it a whole lot, but every now and then you go back to it, because there's not a whole lot of depth to the game, but it is fun for every now and then. Like, when you try to say that it's a Diablo, like, you could play Diablo for hours and hours and hours, but even though that it's not, like, you don't necessarily have to, but it's still not that big campaign.
Right.
One Deck Dungeon's good. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But this is going to be something you're going to want to break out, like, every week to get your fix of. But so, don't get me wrong, it's I highly recommend picking it up, because it does have that, I got some time to kill, wife's not gonna be home for now, let's do it.
I just heard you compare it to gas station food. That's what I heard.
Don't let the word get out. It has a lot of dice. Good Lord, there's a lot of dice.
Yeah, it does have a lot of dice. Because what's kind of cool about it is each one of the colored dice represent like different skills you have, and different types of skills. So certain monsters you need more blue dice than pink dice to defeat them.
So the blue dice, okay. So it could be like the blue dice represents different kinds of damage or whatever it looks like.
Yeah. So, and I can't remember what it is. Whether like, I think like the yellow dice is might, pink is more magic, and I think blue might be more roguish or something along those lines.
And I can play this by myself or with two people. Is that the deal?
You could do both. I mean, it's okay for. I mean, you're playing co-op anyway, so it's okay for two. I mean, it wouldn't be bad. I had more fun just sitting here chucking some dice, killing some time before, you know, people came over. It's a good filler. So, like, just say the three of us are playing a game, and everybody else in Jury's game left. He's waiting for us to finish this game to play another game. So he's just going to whip this out and play for 20 minutes while we're finishing Captain. Okay. So, well, we're finishing something else. So,
sure.
Good filler.
No, that makes perfect sense. Okay. There's that. Those are all the questions I had. You actually probably brought something rad to tell us about that has nothing to do with anything I brought today.
Well, actually, what's pretty cool, too, I did have something else that I wanted to mention, but I'm going to throw in a game real quick from Roberto Fraga. I don't think I ever mentioned this in the past, but he actually made a game that came out within the last couple of years called Dr. Eureka. It's an amazing family game. So it has little cards that'll... So you've got four... They're basically like test tubes in front of you. I think they're four. You'll have test tubes with balls in them, with these little like marbles in them.
Okay. And so this then you'll is Dr. Urethra.
That's right. Yes. Yeah, balls and nose tattoos. So you'll have a card that everybody will play in front of them, you know, or I think it's like universal card that everyone's got to try to get this particular makeup of these marbles, but you can't touch the marbles. So you're using, it's kind of like that old, it's not tanagrams. I can't remember. It's kind of like the old pyramid puzzle where you got to take one test tube, putting all the marbles or three of them into
the
one.
Tower, and, the three tower thing.
Exactly. Yep.
Yes.
So you're doing that with all these different test tubes till you get the exact configuration that's on the card. But like I said, you can't, you know, and just to be people like us, I mean, can you imagine how hard that is? You get, you know, big man hands trying to get all these little test tubes, and kids are just doing it like in 2 seconds. Yeah. And then, or you could take this out at a con after people have been drinking and trying to see how much fun that is to do. So.
Scott likes hearing people talk after they're drunk. I can't imagine watching people try to play this and, no, I need to get the two yellow ones at the bottom.
And then there's just balls everywhere when they knock them over, too.
What's this one called again?
Dr. Eureka?
Okay, so I'm looking at Dr. Panic, not the same one. Dr. Eureka. Dr. Fraga. Oh, no, that's his name. His last name's Fraga.
Fraga, yeah.
Link in the Twitch chat.
Okay, there it is. I see it. Oh, yeah, no, this is cool. He's got a bunch of games. That guy's done a bunch of work, hasn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, he's done, like I said, he generally does a lot of kids' games. Dr. Panic is also by him, but he's done something like Dancing Eggs. He's done a lot of a game called Kaboom. A lot of just really usually Haba games, which is usually just baby and kids games. But there's some good ones, and Haba's starting to get more into the more deeper games. So like a game, Spinderella, Pingo was another one that's come out. So that's Fraga. I could save the other games we're going to talk about for a couple of weeks, because I got some other stuff that we played at Nerdtacular that was just excellent. That
yeah,
I think you got.
I'd love to look at those as well. Dan, and also,
this looks like such a blast,
Brian. This game or this dude, this Roberto Fraga guy, he's from Spain. Maybe he can help you get your 3D printer fixed. Maybe.
Maybe I'll reach out to him.
See what we can
do
there.
Oh, that's right. He was born in Spain.
Yeah.
So his thing on BGG says he's from St. Malo, but I guess that's probably where he lives now.
Yeah. Who knows? Spain. It always rains on the plains in Spain. Wait, how's it going? Whatever it is. Naked ladies dance
exactly
in France.
Right.
I always forget. Yes. All right. Well, great. That means plenty of future stuff when Dan comes on again. Always a pleasure to have you on, dude. Anywhere people should be looking for more content made by Dan the Tabletop Man?
Yep. We're going to be recording our next episode where we're going to do a little bit of recap from some games we played and games from Origins and such on this next week. I think we might actually talk to Jury. And if you don't mind, I'll give Jury a little plug for Jury's action news on Kickstarter right now.
Oh, yeah.
It's doing well. I got to play that. Scott, you got to play it too, right?
I did. I like it a lot. I think it's really fun. But Jury kept bringing up refrigerator poetry, and it's a good comparison. It has that kind of hook of like completing sentences and stuff like that. And I get frustrated with games where someone in the group gets to judge which one they like the best because it's so subjective, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think this one works out pretty well, though. It's a pretty strong take on that idea, and I love the aesthetic of it. I love how hard it leans into this idea that it's the 1970s and we're doing the news. I think it's really great. So, yeah,
You don't necessarily have to be, you know, ad lib to it, or, you know, you don't have to do that, but you can.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what's from the improv. You can throw a little bit of improv in there, or you can just read it. Because a lot of times with games like this, like there was another game called News at 11 that's highly improv. Mm-hmm. And people get really intimidated when you put them on a spot like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, and this takes a lot of that out, but still has some, you know, we played a game we played a couple rounds, the three of us, and we had all the different gamuts. Like I was, you know, I'm pretty comfortable improvising on a spot doing stuff like that. And then Adam, you know, or Matt Cast, he actually had... He's not quite the improver. He just kind of read what he had because he kind of got a little nervous being on a spot there.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm just a ham and raring to just talk to whoever will listen to me.
Sure. So yeah. And then Jury was encouraging. He's like, let's go over to so and so who's got the report, Bill. And you're like, yeah, Jury, I'm here on the side of the bird. I mean, you can really go in. And I think there's fun in that, just the performance of it, let alone the gameplay. So it's good. People should check it out. ActionNewsGame.com will take you right to the Kickstarter.
Yep. And you can check me out on the Geek All Stars.com, the Geek All Stars podcast. And we'll see you boys next time.
Yeah.
Hope everybody has a great week. Thanks, I miss you guys. I'm in that like post-con depression right now.
Me too. I know it's bad.
I'm having that too. It's like, oh.
I have two things. I have post-con depression and beef jerky farts. So.
Wow. One actually could cancel the other one out.
No kidding. One would clear out an entire ballroom if I had it then. Glad I waited till this Thursday to do it. Thanks, Dan. We'll see you later. All right. Awesome. We're going to do your Twitter questions real quick here. And these come to us by all of you people at home. Here's the deal.
And you can always follow me on Twitter.
Oh, he said the dumbest thing today. Did you hear what he said today?
No. What did he say?
Energy Secretary Rick Perry. He said, he was talking about the laws or the law of supply and demand. And okay. He says, the way that works is, you make a whole bunch of supply, and that's going to make it so people demand it. No. No, that's not how that works.
Not quite how economics works.
It's almost exactly the opposite. He doesn't get it. This is why I don't like hiring people for jobs they're not qualified for. Like, he should go do something else. Be in charge of the nation's cattle or something. I don't know what. It's really annoyed me. Really annoyed me. here's your Twitter questions, and they go a little something like this. Scott Lees wrote in, says, are you planning on consistently referring to the new Overwatch character Doomfist as Hansy? No, I'm not doing that. Did you see that today? The Doomfist thing?
I have some people talking about Doomfist, but yeah. I don't even know what Doomfist is. So this is a new character in Overwatch.
New character in Overwatch, but you're familiar with it in only a small way in that the opening cinematic we all got to see at BlizzCon 2014, or 13, whatever it was, the fist that they're guarding in the glass.
Oh, yeah, right, in that museum, sure.
That's his fist. Then in the Indian level where you're escorting the payload's got a container with the fist in it. That's his fist again. And there's a lot of lore about that guy in terms of he's mysterious and works with whatever organization Reaper's working with. And now we know who he is. He's this Nigerian guy. He's tough as hell. And
he's not voiced by Terry Crews.
No, that was a big ruse. The Terry Crews ruse is what we got there.
The Terry Ruse.
Yeah, it's this other guy who's got a really cool accent. The intro they did today was like an anime thing. It's really good. It looked really good to me. Cool. Here's Peter Fisher, who we saw at the event. He says, no question today. I'm off to see Spider-Man of the Queen Dermans. What?
Spider-Man of the Queen Dermans.
Of the Queen Dermans?
The Queen's. Like, I think he's playing off Spider-Man. Of the Spider-Man.
Uh-huh. Of the Queens. He's got a Queen apostrophe S, Dermans.
Queen Dermans.
I don't get
Queen
it.
Queen Dermans? I don't know, but he's probably... Is he playing off the fact that I'm seeing Queen instead of seeing Spider-Man?
Oh, maybe. I don't know why, though. That's really weird. All right, Peter.
Fisher, quit drinking in the middle of the day. No more day drinking.
Yeah, listen. Don't cover your hands in rubber cement and smell them all day. It's not doing you any good. Stump Water Jack says, what was your favorite, most memorable moment from Nerdtacular, both on and off stage? On stage for me, there was a few of them, but I think maybe the big one for me might have been when Ibbot forgot his prop and had to leave and we all sang while he was gone. That was something else.
Yeah.
That was a big deal. Also, I guess my second favorite thing was the video game panel worked out way better than I expected.
That's cool.
Those are my two. Off stage, I don't know. I don't think I can name one.
The offstage thing for me, again, was that comment by Ryan Johnson, Green Bay Spidey, where he said, I've been craving Five Guys all week.
Oh, yeah, that was really good. I keep forgetting that happened there and not
No, I think
that.
It was the JJ comment. I talked about this earlier, where after that Frog Pants All-Stars, Rene asked Tetsemi, have you seen JJ? And he said, yes, we've all seen
we've
JJ.
We've all seen JJ. When did you? Oh, you told us that this morning.
I said that during the show today.
Yeah.
Boy, there's a lot of new AskTMS. There's a new Twitter account called AskTMS that's Asian.
Oh, great. That's great. It's probably some company like Taiwan monkey sex. And you got to ask questions about the Taiwanese monkey sex. That's my thinking. Here's one from Gary Fisher. You know, from Lantronics, formerly of Lantronics,
yeah.
would you rather be able to see 10 minutes into your own future or 10 minutes into the future of anyone but yourself?
Can I constantly see it? Like anytime I want?
I think you see it on demand. Like, you know.
Okay.
You've got the ability to choose whether you see it
whenever I want to.
Yeah.
Then I'm choosing me. I don't care about what somebody else's first 10 minutes or their future 10 minutes. I mean, why would I? Unless it was somebody like, unless it was somebody I had to meet.
I think I would be totally, it's funny. I would want the opposite. I'd want to see 10 minutes in the future of everybody else but me.
Oh, everyone but you. I thought it was just someone else.
No, it'd be.
He says anyone but yourself. It's a bad question. I think what Gary means is one other specific person. But if it's the way you're saying it, Brian, then I'm with you. I would rather see.
I think you can see in the future of anyone but yourself.
Okay. Then yeah, I'd take that.
See when I phrase it like that.
Yep.
It's when better. I say those exact words, like.
If it was into the future of any particular one person. Because this just says anyone, and that could mean, you could take that to mean one other guy or everyone.
Right.
And if it was one other guy, forget it. It's, I want to do me. If it's everyone, I'll do everyone.
Yeah.
Kevin Douglas says, besides myself, who else did you miss at Nerdtacular 2017? Did I miss you, Kevin Douglas? I didn't mean to. You should have come up to me, buddy.
I guess we missed Kevin Douglas.
I have no idea.
Lex Dallas from the Scrambles came in from Pasadena, I think, for one day. Maybe he was at the meet and greet or something, but yeah. I didn't get a chance to see him.
Oh, Brett Rounsville came in Saturday, and I missed him completely. That was the other guy I wanted to see, and I didn't get to see him. And I also only saw Will Harris for like a hot 5 seconds, and then he was off having fun. I'm glad he had fun, but
you know who I missed it? I'll tell you who I missed at Nerdtacular 2017. Brian Dunaway. That's who I missed at Nerdtacular 2017.
Oh, for sure. We could have used him there. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, how about this one? What would the 25-year-old think about the current you? 25-year-old you think about the current you? I don't know. He'd feel pretty good about it, I think. I don't know. That's kind of a dope at 25.
Yeah, he'd be interested to find out how I got so fat if he could only use my phone.
I was going to say, that was right around that time, right?
It was right around that time, yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty close to the time we recorded that. So there is the 25-year-old me.
I mean, I had a kid when I was 25, and I think I would... it would be interesting as that 25-year-old to see that my oldest, who would have just been born then, is happy and doing great. That would have been good.
Yeah, I think the 25-year-old me would look at what I'm doing right now for a living and say, no way, really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I wouldn't have believed it either. There's no way.
Yeah.
I mean, I had some ideas, but I didn't think I was ever going to do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wait, the guy from MTV who did Headbangers Ball is doing this? What?
How weird. Tell us about Bearded
You know
Fruit.
He's got talent.
How about this one? What's your favorite food to cook over a campfire? For me, it's one of those tinfoil dinners. You just jam it packed full of meat and veggies and onions and cook it
really?
Over the fire. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah. It is s'mores, man. The next door neighbor has that fire pit in their front yard. And, two or three times a summer, we like to get out there and just sit out there by the fire and, you know, sing and talk about stuff. And we're always doing the marshmallows. I even have like this cheapo plastic marshmallow thing. It looks like a fishing reel. So you've got a little knob on the side that you turn, and what it does is it slowly rotates the bar that's got the marshmallow on it, so you can just put it there, turn the thing, and it evenly like rotisseries your marshmallow, so you don't get one side that's darker than the other.
So we learned that's really good. I'm gonna do that. I want to get one of those. My wife got a kitchen torch. You usually use it for like
creme brulee
and that sort of thing.
Yeah,
she took it outside, excuse me, once when our little fire thing wouldn't work, our fire pit, and she manually did marshmallows with it. Best marshmallows I've ever had in my entire life.
A lot of people think, oh no, you just burn them and then you blow them out. No. Try cooking one slowly until the outside is golden brown, and it just comes right off of the skewer, and then put that between a couple of graham crackers with some chocolate. You are in for a treat, my friends.
Yeah, no kidding. Go tell my 25-year-old self though not to do that very often.
It's fattening me right up.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Maybe only have a couple of those 25-year-old self.
Let's see. We have one from... Let's skip ahead to that.
Wouldn't you be afraid to like have the ability to tell your 25-year-old self something because you're afraid it would really screw up things to the point where you're at now?
Yeah. I don't like this. This idea of having time travel-y go talk to yourself before is bad, I think.
Yeah, really is.
Because I feel like the minute I'd say who I am, suddenly something would change. It depends on which time travel thing you adhere to, but
sure.
The one you adhere to,
it'd be fine because you've just created another branch. Your existing timeline still exists, and that's the only one that you yourself can travel back and forth to. But you create a brand new timeline that has the other version of you that does this stuff.
Yeah, and I think it's probably okay. Mm-hmm. I still think it would freak a kid. The kid version of me out would run from me. Not be interested in talking to me at all. Mm-hmm. Hi, Scott and Brian. Since it's my birthday, says John. Brian, what is your favorite birthday song cover?
No.
What do you like?
There's a... So Altered Images does that song, Happy Birthday, Happy Birthday, Happy Birthday. They're a really goofy pop band. Mm-hmm. The Ting Tings did a really cool cover of that song, which is lends itself right to... right to the Ting Ting's wheelhouse, that style. Mm. So that's probably my favorite.
I don't think I have one. I can't think of one.
Happy birthday. You can talk about do 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 do.
Say it's your birthday. Yeah, that's there's one, that. Right? I can't think of any others. Okay.
Weird Al Yankovic's Happy Birthday.
There you go.
It's time to celebrate your birthday. It happens every year.
Oh yeah, that one's not bad.
Yeah.
Michael Sluck says, "Any place online I can watch Battle of the Frog Pants All Stars?" Yeah. If you go to go to the Alpha Geek Media channel on YouTube, just search for Alpha Geek Radio on YouTube, and you'll find it. They're all there in a raw format. I will also, if I can get some frickin' time, put that stuff all on my on the Nerdtacular site as well. So you'll be able to get access to all of that stuff. Every panel we did, everything that we streamed live, we do have backups of or VODs of. Final question. Brian, what brand of bike do you ride? Asks Nick Lundgren.
Dolph Lundgren?
Dolph Lundgren says, what bike do you ride? I will break it, he says. So
it
what do
is
you...
the iCadent 8, and it is made by... I'm looking it up right now. Wow, must be called something different because that is so not coming up there.
Hmm.
Bicycle. It is a Raleigh. Okay, it is the Raleigh. Oh, it's the i8. That's why. It's the Raleigh Cadent i8.
Okay.
Made by Raleigh, and it's cool. It's got a gearbox instead of gears on the back wheel. So instead of having the chain wrap around these gears and hope that it always lands on the right chain, it just adjusts the gear size within this box. And makes it so that you can change gears really, really easy.
That's really cool.
It is. It's slick.
I like that a lot. So there you go. I drive a Giant. Nice. Or I ride a Giant. Although right now I don't because it's busted and I got to take it
a
in.
A Giant Schwinn. The Giant.
Schwinn Giant. I think that's it. Please, if you want to send us your own, ask TMS is the hashtag. Frogpants.com/TMS for everything else. Let's get out of here. We'll be back on Monday. We got Film Sack this weekend. There's a core tonight because of all the screw-ups with time and also the holiday and also my power being out. So that's tonight. Tomorrow, 10 a.m. Mountain, we'll do a live instance. Don't know what we're doing yet. Probably the new patch. What's after that? Oh, Current Geek tomorrow evening. And then a Boop show this weekend as well. So full slate of stuff. Back at it, everybody. Come on back for all that.
You don't take no week off.
I'm not eating any more beef jerky. I swear. Just ruining this studio space.
You wrecked the room.
I really have. Anyway, let's get out of here. Do you want to play a song to take us out?
I do, Scott. You know, somebody once told me that the world was going to own me.
Mm.
And because I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed. Is it own or owe?
Oh.
Somebody once told me the world's going to owe me.
I thought it was
or own me.
Own me. I thought it was own.
I think own me. Yeah. Anyway, Jeff wrote in, said, "Hey, Scott and Brian."
Hello.
I just had a day of exploring Apple Music and came across a cover version of Don't You Forget About Me done by Smash Mouth, and I just wanted to share it with the rest of the tadpool. Hey now, love the show though. I'm in the tadpool as Win Jim.
Nice. Nice.
Well done. You know what? Oh, this world is going to roll me. Yes, never mind. Roll me. That's right. This world is going to roll me.
Oh. World See, is going to roll me. You're right. That's it.
Yeah. Now it all makes sense. As much as I rag on Smash Mouth, this is actually a pretty good cover. I mean, it's not, you know, Smash Mouth does what they do very well, and this fits into that spot very well. But it is Don't You Forget About Me. It is by the band Smash Mouth, and it comes from the deluxe edition of their album Magic, which came out 5 years ago, and I had never even heard this song before. So check it out, Smash Mouth, covering Simple Minds, Don't You Forget About Me.
All right, we'll see you guys Monday.
Troubles and doubts, giving me everything inside and out. Love's strange, so real in the dark. Think of the tender things that we were working on. Slow change may pull us apart. When the light gets into your heart, baby, don't you forget about me.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
Bastion has a